everybody, and welcome to a new episode of Forgotten Horror Classics on Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, the Moo Count, otherwise known as Paul A. Presenza, and I am joined by...
Joe!
How's it going, Joe?
Pretty good.
Outstanding. Let's pause this and see how it sounds. And tonight, we are here to talk about the 2016 film The Void. Had you heard about this film before or seen it?
Never heard about it. Never seen it.
Yeah, it's funny. I hadn't really either. And from what I gather, not a lot of mainstream movie people talked about this. I guess I don't know if it's because it was a Canadian production without any big stars, or I think part of it is because it was crowdfunded. But I know some indie film, especially indie horror people, did know about it, which was nice. But the mainstream folks hadn't really heard about it. And so when I did a little research, a lot of people were saying, you know, how this was a very, very, really well done cosmic horror, like very, very Lovecraftian, and, you know, very much like The Thing, you know, if you remember.
I have seen that one.
John Carpenter's The Thing. Just very, very crazy and strange and bizarre and everything. So we will talk about that after we listen to a little bit of spooky music, and then we will be back. Okay, so, first reactions. What did you think of The Void?
It was gross.
Yeah, they didn't spare any expense in the gore department, did they?
No. And it got really gory really quickly. Mm-hmm. And it...
stuff went quick.
Yeah, and even the very first scene, you know... are people screaming and running out of a house and somebody getting lit on fire. And it's like, wow, let's hit the ground running, shall
you know,
we?
as you do.
Yeah. So it's not a slow burn.
You know, those little rural towns don't have much to do. So get drunk, shoot people, set them on fire on a Friday night, you know.
My town had it wrong. We just tipped cows over.
Oh, poor cows.
Yeah, seriously, that's what we... Oh. I didn't partake.
Outstanding. So, wow, do you think you can maybe sum up what happens in this film?
No, but I mean, I try.
Okay.
Basically, you see people at the beginning kind of running and you don't know what from, and then the scene changes to a hospital. A cop finds one of the guys who was running from the crazy house at the beginning, the one who escaped, and he's, you know, delusional and everything, and he seems either sick or injured or something, so the cop picks him up and takes him to the hospital. Spoiler alert, he had a chance to go to another hospital 20 minutes away, but he decided not to.
Dope.
Even though the current hospital is like half of its closed because there was a major fire and they were relocating and stuff. So they didn't have a whole lot of staff there at the time, but he still takes him to the closer hospital because he doesn't seem like he's going to make it 20 minutes, you know, and...
Plus his ex-wife works there, so a little extra.
You think that was incentive?
I think that was part of it too.
Maybe. But anyway, so he goes in and there's a whole, you know, cast of characters there that end up getting trapped in this hospital with the cop because these weird cult members show up outside wearing KKK style robes, but with a nice accessory of a black triangle in the middle. So, you know, the KKK got some bling for the 21st century. And so they're trapped in this hospital, and then one of the nurses, they find stabbing a guy in the face and has ripped all of her facial skin off. And so the cop, you know, shoots her because, well, once she just killed somebody and then she came after him with a knife, so he stabs her.
And she's a little bit nutty.
I mean,
she's
he shoots her, sorry.
She's like, this isn't my face.
Yeah,
what happened to my face?
Yeah, this isn't me. I'm taking it off.
Starts pulling her face off.
Yeah, yeah. And then a little while later, after a lot of fighting and the two guys who were in the crazy house at the beginning break their way into the hospital. It's unclear what kind of characters they are, but they seem like bad guys, like right off the bat. You think that they're part of this evil, whatever it is. Then suddenly the nurse, you know, has turned Bev. Yes. Has turned into like a Cthulhu style, you know, many tentacled critter.
Nightmare creature.
Critter. She's a cute little critter.
Oh, yeah.
And so clearly now something otherworldly is going on. And we come to find out that the two guys from the murder house at the beginning are not just randomly on a murder spree. They knew that people were transforming into these critter things and they were trying to kill them and stop whatever was going on. But they didn't really know much about what was going on either.
And they don't trust anybody, so they're trying to kill everyone they can.
And then the other people are trying to kill them because they just think they're crazy murderers, and it's just a whole lot of nobody helping anybody.
Right, and then the one guy, the crazy guy that the cop, or that's the sheriff saves, stabs the doctor, the main doctor, and he dies. But not for long.
Not for long.
Because
no,
whatever
stays dead for long.
Whatever resurrected Bev into a nightmare creature does the exact same to the doctor. But as it turns out, that was kind of according to plan.
Right, right. So at some point, one of the people in the hospital is a pregnant woman and she's having issues with delivery. They think they're going to have to do a cesarean. But of course, they're in the lobby, and all of the supplies are in the other part of the hospital where, you know, crazy Cthulhu monster thing was, they thought they killed it, but they don't even know if they can kill it, because they killed Bev, and she turned into this thing, so.
Right.
Anyway, the cop goes out to try to get his gun and says, hey, wife, don't go into the hospital by yourself looking for supplies until I get back. And as soon as he leaves, what does she do?
Mm-hmm.
She goes looking for supplies by herself. And it doesn't end well.
No.
She never comes back. But so eventually they all have to go look for her. And they end up in a part of the hospital that doesn't even exist, which is real neat.
Oh, yeah.
So they've entered another dimension of sorts.
And it's not a happy dimension at all.
Oh, my God. Oh.
It is not the dimension of ice cream and kittens and fluffy bunnies.
No, and not even the ice cream bunny, I mean, would be happy there.
No.
But anyway, so they find a room with the doctor, Richard, with his kind of failed experiments into this void thing that he thinks is going to cheat death. And
he has.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, these earlier experiments want to die and he won't let them.
Yeah.
But they're trying, and they even have one that's been impaling its head into
a spike.
Yeah, for like God knows how many years.
Oh my gosh, yeah. That was like, it reminded me of Sisyphus so much, like gruesome Sisyphus. Mm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he stops just long enough to look at the intruders and then go back to impaling his head. Like, oh. Yeah,
and when he does that, you get to see the giant crater in his skull, right through it.
Yeah, that was nice. So it turns out, yeah, this is all the doctor somehow stumbled across an ancient ritual to open a portal to some other dimension, and that brings back all the old ones.
The old ones,
yes,
exactly.
Very Lovecraftian.
Very Lovecraftian.
Old ones. And
it was funny. He says, you know, you'd be surprised what you'd find when
you
go
looking. Yeah, that was a great line.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, yeah. So,
went out to look for milk, came home with Cthulhu.
Right. That's what happens when you go shopping without a list.
There you go.
Yeah.
Without a list.
He has turned, what's the main woman's name? Was it Allison?
Alice.
Alice or Allison?
Could be Allison.
I think it was Allison. Anyway, the cop's wife, and what's the cop's name again? Gosh.
Oh, God. I can never...
I'm sorry. I remember the doctor.
Remember
Richard
things. It's Daniel.
Daniel, thank you. Yeah, they did say it enough times, but I guess I was too focused on the gore and the horror.
As you can't help
to remember character names. But, yeah, Allison gets sort of turned into one of these monstrosities. She sort of gives birth to a Cthulhu thing, and it's pretty gruesome. And but it kills her, you know, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. And then the other pregnant woman that they were trying to help before, it turns out that she was impregnated by the doctor on purpose. She's like a teenager, and he's like in his 70s probably, at least, you know. Mm-hmm. And
so it's all right, Matt, if you're going to be a monstrosity of some kind.
Oh, yeah, right. Well, anyway, he impregnated her so that he could do this ritual that would like swap her actual fetus with... what he called his daughter.
His beautiful daughter.
Yeah, his daughter had tragically died when she... It looked like she was maybe 8 or 9 years old or something.
Something like that.
No more than 10. But it basically destroyed him. And this is when he went on this quest to cheat death, you know, and to basically resurrect his dead daughter, which he thinks he does. But, you know, what comes out is this... horrific monster, worse than any of the other ones,
and it's huge
with awesome feet though.
Huge.
The feet were the best. Anyway, they were kind of like backwards goat hooves or something. Like if you took a goat and like broke its foot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and it's the special effects are very similar to the Rob Bottin special effects that you saw in The Thing, where you'd have these bubbling horrific things, extra heads and tentacles,
yeah,
and shit just growing out of things out of nowhere.
Or going into people's eye sockets.
Internal organs on the outside when they should be on the inside.
Yeah,
that kind
of
stuff.
It's lovely.
Yeah. Lots of goo and lots of just stuff.
So I guess the movie pretty much ends with the cop pushing the doctor, Richard, through his own portal, basically, that he opened, this big triangle-shaped dimension, wormhole, whatever it was. And when he does that, it causes the whole fake wing of the hospital,
the extra planar dimension,
it causes it to collapse. And then the one guy, the sort of mute character, who he's mute because he has a neck injury, right? Like
he cut his tongue out.
Okay, I didn't realize that's what happened. Okay, but anyway, he does escape, and he finds one other person. She had been like a nursing practicum student or something. She was a total ditz. But
Kim.
Yeah, Kim. They are the only two to survive, and the collapse of that paranormal wing or whatever you want to call it takes everything with it. And then the very end, though, you see into the other dimension, and you see the cop, Daniel, and his wife, Allison, standing there looking at this giant pyramid thing, and they're like...
enormous black pyramid that takes up almost the entire horizon.
Yeah, and they're like, where the fuck are we? And then it ends.
Right.
So there you go. Nutshell. Wrapped up in a nutshell.
Very similar to the plot line for My Little Pony Goes to La La Land, but, you know...
What is that? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, no. No, clearly this is a dark, gritty, grotesque, disgusting, violent, horrific, nightmarish kind of film. And boy, howdy, I love that kind of a movie.
Yeah.
So. And you don't get this. I mean, we had talked earlier about, you know, what constitutes a Lovecraftian type of horror film, because it's a very specific sort of thing. And I'd mentioned, you know, the classic one like Dunwich Horror, and then a more modern one like The Color Out of Space, which you had seen and liked. It's good, and it's very Lovecraftian. However, this is like, hold my beer, let me show you Lovecraft.
Yeah.
And let's work in a whole bunch of vomit-inducing, grotesque special effects and gore and violence.
It's very stabby.
Very stabby.
Yeah.
Lots of stabbings.
Yeah.
You're going to need 37 showers after you watch this film. Inside your head and outside your head.
Yep.
Because, you know, the movie will screw with you. And, you know, the lead guy, he keeps having these weird flashbacks.
Yeah.
Where he's flashing back to stuff that happens before. He's also flashing forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure he quite understands what's going on. And we certainly don't understand what's going on.
It's somehow Richard is trying to show him stuff.
Yeah.
He keeps referencing that he's trying to show him, and he's like, and you still don't understand.
Right, because apparently he can get into people's heads and fuck with them.
Oh, because he was doing it to that other
guy,
too.
Yeah, he did it to the other guy and made him think about the stuff that led up to the whole farmhouse butchery.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think he got into the mute kid's head as well. Excuse me. So this clearly seems to be a thing that he can do because he's a charmer, this Richard.
Because he's a what? He's a charmer.
Yep. He's all happy that he's discovered a way to cheat death, but of course you have to die in order to do it.
Right, right. Well, your physical body has to die, but clearly he still has his conscious being. And
it's weird. It's always a raw deal. You know, it's just like vampires. Everyone's like, oh, you get to be immortal. It's like, yeah, you get to be a rotting corpse that wanders around and has to drink blood in order not to, you know, rot into a bunch of blackened, disgusting pieces.
Do you remember that movie Death Becomes Her?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that was the worst to me because they were just falling apart.
Yeah.
And the only thing that could, like, fix them was, like makeup and plaster. And oh my God, it was so awful. Anyway.
Yeah, who wants that kind of immortality?
No kidding.
No, thank you. But yeah, and so there's all this ritual stuff going on. There's all this religious, pseudo-religious stuff going on and you know, sacrificing and cults, dark cults with stabby knives. And they're creepy as fuck because they don't say a damn thing. They just stand there.
With their white sheets. I mean, this literally they look like the Klan with black triangles on their face. And
they come out of nowhere.
Yeah, and then when they pull their knives out, they're all like synchronized. You know, which is weird because I'm pretty sure that these are all supposed to be just regular people who are followers of Richard, basically, because they're like, oh my gosh, he found the secret. But
probably
he's,
put the whammy on them, too.
Oh, he's gotten into their brain. That's why they're all synchronized. Yeah. Oh, okay, that makes sense.
And there's a whole bunch of them, and it's, you know, initially you think, okay, this is going to be a spam in the cabin, like a typical zombie movie where they're trying to break in and kill him. Oh no.
Mm-mm.
Oh no. They're there to make sure that they stay there and don't leave.
Yeah.
Which is even creepier.
Because they know that Richard wants to turn several of them.
Richard wants to have his fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, changing.
He wants to bring his friends along.
Yeah.
I mean, because, you know, Allison and Daniel, I mean, they were close at that time.
Yes.
So, yeah.
He wants to have his fun and frolics and,
friends.
You know, cheat death. And
don't go into the void without your friends.
And bring his daughter back. And I guess, you know, he talks about how that was hard and it changed him. Boy, howdy!
Yeah. He's like, but you know, you get through it and you find a way. Yeah, he found a way.
Yeah, there's this great scene after he's kidnapped, not Beverly,
Allison.
Yeah, and he's got her strapped to the table, and he's very calmly, very serenely, sort of saying, you know, oh, this is all just very, very interesting.
And I'm trying to help you.
Yes, and I didn't quite expect death to feel like this. It's very invigorating, and you'll like it, really.
And yeah, as he's peeling off his skin,
face and skull.
Yeah, he's like, you know, all these years of performing surgery on people, I had no idea it'd feel like this. And then he drops a chunk of skin into the sink and,
oh! It was gross.
He's flaying himself alive.
Right.
Well, dead or whatever he is.
Eesh.
Flaying himself in whatever state he's in.
And these cult people, I guess the one guy, the meth head, he originally went back to the house to score some dope. But it turns out, you know, he got captured by them and they were doing weird sex things and transformations and murders and rituals and stuff. Clearly, he was not having a fun time either, which is why he escaped.
So he and that girl, do you think they were prisoners? I'm thinking they were probably making them have sex because they were going to, you know, take her and make her the vessel for this,
I guess.
Who knows?
I don't know.
Who knows?
I'm not sure.
But they also, he said that they made them watch as they sacrificed people and
right,
stuff.
Right.
So, yeah, they did not have a good time.
And who knows, they might have been having sex with the weird medical experiment creature thingies too.
Oh, that'd be horrible.
I know.
I don't think they were in the cabin though, were they? Weren't they all in the basement in the hospital?
But the thing is that because space time is so warped, it's kind of like it's kind of like all these different places at the same time.
I don't know. Maybe.
It was weird. It was very hard to tell.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's messing with your sense of time. It's messing with your sense of space. It's messing with your sense of morality. It's with your sense of death, with your sense of family. It pretty much everything. There's nothing firm to grasp onto, like any really good nightmare, you know, where everything feels like it's sliding away and you've got nothing concrete to hold on to. And it's just, it's a nightmare of a movie. It's great. It's really, really well done.
When the pregnant woman stands up and kills her grandfather. Oh, man, that surprised the heck out of me because you have no reason at all to suspect that there's anything weird going on with the pregnant woman at all for the whole movie. And her grandfather is nothing but this sweet, kind, loving, wonderful, and all of a sudden she stabs him in the neck and she's like, hee, I'm part of this, and then walks down the hallway in a very creepy way and you're like, what the F?
It's almost ready.
There were
a few surprises for you, weren't there?
I had a couple of good jump scares. And they weren't like,
they weren't cheap ones. They weren't like a cat all of a sudden jumping out of the closet.
No, there's like, you know, when she's looking for medical supplies and she's looking at each individual bottle and then she bends down to put one in the bag and you see the doctor behind her in the
doorway.
Dead
doctor.
The doctor who had died, like 15 minutes earlier. And you're like, shit, that was not supposed to be there.
right.
So that one really got me. Yeah. I love jump scares too, and I like that a lot.
I just don't like cheap ones, like I said, like it's a cat all of a sudden or something stupid like that. But these weren't cheap; these were well done.
Oh, I'll even take the cheap ones. I get adrenaline from them, and you know what? I'm not going to try to intellectualize it. I just like it. All right,
it's
like riding a roller coaster.
Well, this is plenty for both. If you like that, and if you like it more intellectual, I think it'll satisfy both cravings.
There weren't that many of the jump scare type things, but the few they had were well placed.
They just stabbed the shit out of people in front of you or chopped the shit out of somebody.
Stabby holy cow.
So you got to see that coming, which was interesting. So I guess I could talk a little bit about who actually made this film. Okay, so the film was both written and directed by a pair of individuals, Jeremy Gillespie and Stephen Kostansky, okay? And I believe they are Canadians, and they have done a few things together, but neither one of them are really known for being directors per se, even though they've both directed stuff before. So Jeremy Gillespie is mostly known as an art guy. He was an art department person, an art director. He was also a musical composer. But he mostly does things like graphic design and, you know, first assistant art director and just does that kind of stuff for other films and for other productions, especially a lot of TV stuff. But I see, like, he was a second assistant art director for Pacific Rim. He was an assistant art director on Total Recall. He was on the Poltergeist and Suicide Squad, Shape of Water.
He's got some cred.
Star Trek Discovery. Right. So he's done a lot of that kind of stuff. And then he's also a writer and done visual effects. But as far as directing, he's done a few shorts. And then he did a movie called Father's Day, which was a horror movie about, I think it was like someone killing fathers or something like that. I remember reading about it, although I haven't seen it yet. And then it was also co-directed by the other gentleman, Stephen Kostansky, who is more known as a makeup guy. So he does the makeup for all kinds of different stuff. So things like a movie called Clown, which was a creepy movie, Crimson Peak. He also did Suicide Squad, Star Trek Discovery. he did the prosthetic stuff for Leprechaun Returns. and just a whole bunch of stuff. He's on the movie Capote, which I think won an Academy Award, although I don't think he did. And he also directed a few more movies. One of the movies he did was one called Manborg, which is the movie that I was going to talk about in Indie Film Cafe. He also did the one that I mentioned before, The Leprechaun Returns. Day of the Dead, VHS 94. He was one of the segment directors for that. Psycho Gorman. That's another weird, creepy, bizarre comedy horror movie that we're going to do on Indie Film Cafe. He's the director for that one. And a few other bits and pieces here, too. So these guys have some background in other things, but they were able to come together in this instance and work together, both writing and directing, and put this together. And all I can say is, wow. And the other thing that was amazing and you couldn't believe, and I couldn't believe, is that this was a crowdfunded movie.
Yeah.
Wow. Are you kidding me? You generally do not see this level of excellence from a crowdfunded film.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of indie movies that have to go
and
through
that. And back in 2016, that was relatively new.
Right.
Yeah.
Relatively, yeah. But this won a bunch of awards. It won the Boston Underground Film Award in 2017, the Fright Meter Award. It won for Best Makeup and Best Special Effects. It was nominated in the Nashville Film Festival and the Nevermore Film Festival. So it's gotten a lot of love from critics, even though for some reason its score is fairly low on the Internet Movie Database, 5.9. That's kind of nuts. I would have rated it a whole lot higher than that. I thought it was very good.
Yeah.
So some of the folks who were involved, the lead, the sheriff, Daniel Carter, is Aaron Poole. And he's been in a whole bunch of different things. A lot of TV and some movies, especially a lot of Canadian stuff, because it's a lot of Canadian people here. But he was in such things as Adoration, which was a really good film. That's Anton Egoyan. And he was in X-Files, in the TV show, and Mutant X, and The Samaritan. He was in that film. He was in a TV series called King, and a TV series called The Listener, and Lost Girl, Schitt's Creek, stuff like that. So he's been in a lot of different things. And he was really, really good in this particular film.
Ah, uh-huh. Allison was very good, too.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Richard. Find out what Richard was in.
Well,
Doctor, he was good.
Allison was played by Kathleen Monroe, who's another actress who's been in a whole bunch of different things. So let's see here. So she was in a number of the Law and Order TV series. She was in 1-800-MISSING. She was in Beautiful People. She was in Ugly Betty. Remember that show?
Mm-hmm.
Dresden Files.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Without a Trace, NCIS Los Angeles, Nikita, Stargate Universe, just all kinds of different stuff. So I don't know whether I had seen her before. I just don't remember exactly where. She was really, really good. Ellen Wong played poor Kim, the nursing student who was just, they weren't even supposed to be there that day.
I wasn't supposed to be here today.
I know, it was such a shame. She started off doing stuff, so she was in Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then she was in a number of different TV shows.
I hated her character, but she played it very convincingly.
Yeah.
I mean, she was just like such a whiny, helpless, you know, like you just wanted to smack her and like, you don't have options. Suck it up and
like
do something.
Like a 19-year-old teenager who just does not want to do anything.
Right. And she can't be that young because she's in her residency for nursing, you know, and she's like crying in a corner most of the movie. Suck it up, Kim.
Well, she was in a bunch of episodes of The Carrie Diaries and it's another miniseries called Combat Hospital, which is interesting. So she's definitely done some TV, something called The Condor, which I'd heard of but not seen. And most famously, and where I recognize her from, is she was in Gorgeous Ladies of Wrestling, GLOW, which was a great series.
I still haven't seen
it. Oh, you got to see that.
I'm a huge Marc Maron fan. Yes, in fact, yes. Paul just came over for a Marc Maron party. Mm-hmm. What was that? A couple weeks ago.
Right. That was a lot of fun.
Most recent stand up. But I know I still haven't seen Glow.
And she was in a movie called Film Fest, which I've also heard is really, really good.
Not heard of it.
And then, finally, Dr. Richard Powell was played by Kenneth Walsh. Now, Kenneth Walsh has been in a million things.
Because he's old. He's had time.
Yeah. So, from the late 60s all the way up. Oh, unfortunately, he passed away in 2012. I mean, sorry.
Wow, he was already dead when he made
Well, he could have been. No,
skills.
2022.
Skills. That's method acting.
2022. He was 80 years old, so he had had a pretty rich life.
Wow.
But yeah, so things from like, okay, Kids in the Hall,
yes.
Star Trek Discovery, the Lizzie Borden Chronicles, the Story of Luke, and Haven, and Grey Gardens. He was in that one, Survival of the Dead. I don't know if you saw that movie. That was kind of a weird one.
I saw The Last Templar up there. I saw that.
Bionic Woman and Fantastic Four. He was in that. Stargate Atlantis. Yeah. The Fog, the remake of The Fog. And just, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. And goes all the way, you know, it was in Witchblade. And goes all the way back into the 80s. Oh, God. He was in Twin Peaks and just a ton. He was in Crocodile Dundee 2. He was in that one, but all the way back into the 70s, he was on a TV movie, the Three Musketeers. He played D'Artagnan.
Wow.
And the Great Detective, and yeah, so he has been around, and I'd recognized him before. He's been, just like I said, in a million things.
He was the only great one that looked familiar to me.
Yeah, character actor. Just really played the doctor well. Really super creepy and just very, very effective, and could have been a real caricature, but he handled it really, really well,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Because I didn't expect him, and when I first saw that, for him to be the total nutso
guy behind all this. He seemed so, like, put together and, like, psychologically stable, and it turns out he's a wackadoo, you know, but yeah, you just really, and then you felt for him when he was trying to comfort Daniel because they had just lost their unborn child. She had a miscarriage basically during delivery.
Right.
And he was pretty broken up about it. The marriage was falling apart, and this doctor's trying to console him, you know, by relating to him over the loss of his daughter.
When she
was like, you know, 9 or 10. And you think, oh my gosh, this is like probably the most grounded, normal person in this movie.
Oh, jeez.
Whoops.
Yeah. So yeah, this was a crowdfunded film. As I said, it was on Indiegogo. And wow, talk about a successful project. You generally don't see, you know, these sort of things happen.
I wonder to who this donated level of to success. This. Like, oh, what a ton. Kind of people? Well, I know, but what were people like hoping for? They're like, yes, we just desperately want another really great Lovecraft movie, and I need tentacles and lots of them. And I mean,
and that's the other thing I wanted to get into is that even though there was a level of special effects, and it's mostly that weird, creepy other world stuff that's going on, and the massive black pyramids and all of that stuff, the clouds and all that. Mostly the effects are physical. You know, they are physical special effects. It's all, you know, stuff that's created either in camera or physically made by the makeup department.
Right, like prosthetics that are moving
and
pieces.
Tentacles and goo spurting everywhere.
Yeah.
And just all kinds of stuff. And that
like
was,
we said, Lovecraftian in the extreme.
And that's what I love. I'm so tired of movies relying on just
CGI.
Yeah, because no matter how good the CGI is, it just comes off as flat. It just doesn't come off as believable or as real. Whereas this stuff, I mean, you could feel like the goo and the ickiness and the grotesqueness of it. It was just horrible. It was really well done. From what I gather, too, this is an interesting bit. Apparently, the folks who made this film were said to be inspired by Guillermo del Toro, who was working on The Mountains of Madness, which is, of course, a Lovecraft project.
And, I've never seen that.
Well, and I don't think it actually ever happened. I think.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a big story about that.
Because I thought I'd
kind of like his Don Quixote kind of a thing.
Guillermo del Toro films, but yeah, because you were mentioning that the one guy did the makeup on Crimson Peak, and the other guy worked on Shape of Water. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So, but they were very, very, insistent on all the practical effects and making it feel as real as possible, which helps the verisimilitude of the film. As a matter of fact, apparently they were originally going to film this in an actual abandoned hospital, but it turned out that was way too unsafe to do that. So I guess they had to have a set built, really.
It looks like a really rundown 80s hospital. Mm-hmm. I mean, which you would expect for a really small town to have, like, a really old, like, with old computers. And I don't know when this was supposed to be set, if it was supposed to be modern day or not.
But
it had like the big boxy computer monitors, mm-hmm. and like the big, like, concrete walls that were textured to look sort of like brick, but they're not really, and then painted over with beige. You know, like anybody who went to elementary school in the 80s, that's what our hallways looked like.
Right.
It totally, nailed the you know, what you would expect a hospital in a really poor rural town to look like.
Right. Yeah. So it ends up being a sort of, you know, nightmarish mix of horrific creature features like you might see in It or the Thing, you know,
mm-hmm.
mixed with grotesque body horror.
Yeah, there's like you a might lot of that.
See some in some of those Japanese films that are mm-hmm. really gross that creep you out, because there's nothing more horrible than seeing horrible things happening to your own body and you have no control over it.
Yeah.
Like when Allison is strapped to the gurney and she's looking down and she can see shit in her stomach moving around.
Oh. I mean,
how horrible is that? That's why I'm like, please just kill me.
Yeah. That's, I actually hate body horror.
Yeah, movies. Body horror is horrific.
I don't like, I mean, I guess they have the intended effect on me. But I don't like it.
I don't like it
at all.
It's disgusting and grotesque, and it is, and it's horrible. And you know, I mean, we don't get to see. You get to see some things where they're like peeling bits and pieces off of themselves, but
yeah.
You know, at least they didn't like go internally. You know,
yeah.
Themselves. I mean, when the monsters did it, that was bad enough,
right?
And somebody was doing it to them, but when you're doing it yourself and you're like pulling out your own intestines, that's just
they didn't go that far.
No, they didn't go that far.
That was good,
but it was nice to see that all kind of mixed in there together.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. I don't know what else to say other than, you know, this was just an amazing film that just kind of came out of nowhere, because I didn't hear about the big Facebook or Indiegogo thing that went for
mm-hmm,
this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in 2016, I wasn't really thinking about that sort of thing.
And I kind of wanted to point out that at the end of the movie, when Dr. Richard had finally peeled all of his skin off and he was whatever thing he was now, it looked very much
whatever the hell it was,
like the guy from Stranger Things. What the heck's his name? What was his name?
I forget, but you had a whole Stranger Things set of comments that you
Because, like, first of all, Dr. Richard looks like the guy in the Upside Down in the, like, the last two seasons. I can't remember what his name is now. Anyway, the guy that's, like, hanging in the web and stuff.
That guy.
Yeah, and he sounds like him, too, and it's just like, okay. And then when they go through the pyramid, or when you see flashes of what it looks like on the other side, on in this void, it looks like the Upside Down in Stranger Things.
Yeah,
they borrowed heavily, I think, from this. I'm not gonna say like right outright ripped off, but like the lightning, you know how there's always lightning in the Upside Down. Same thing here, lightning behind the pyramid. So the whole look, I feel like, I wonder if we researched Stranger Things, if we would find an admission that they liked this film.
Well, but without being a direct copy, because the whole
thing with
the whole thing with the Upside Down is that it is the sort of mirror universe of the one that they're in. So it's the exact same town, the exact same house, the exact same
which this one was not.
Just decayed, right. Yeah. This was a total other world, but other dimension. But I'm
saying artistically.
Sure.
Artistically, I feel like they were heavily inspired by this film. because the villain and the aesthetic of the world looks so similar.
Absolutely, absolutely. But yeah, that's where all your sort of cosmic horror, Lovecraftian, old world, the light between the stars kind of thing is going on when they're off in this other verse,
mm-hmm.
this horrific, horrible other verse where they don't even go into much detail about what it is, but you know it's not a happy place.
No.
It's not a place you want to be, ever.
I mean, Richard seems to want to be there.
Yeah, well.
But apparently, I think it's just because he is crazy enough.
He's gone shitbird crazy.
In his grief,
yeah.
That any place without his daughter is hell, basically. Right. And so, as long as he could be with his daughter again, then...
Not even his daughter, but some...
This critter thing that
resembles, maybe, kind of?
I don't understand why he thought this was his daughter. I don't understand it. Like, did he save her body and do this
or
to it?
Or essence what happened? Or something. He must have saved
her
something.
Her essence is like the dark crystal?
I guess, because he did...
Her essence.
He did, quote-unquote, implant something. I just don't know what that was.
Yeah, yeah.
And for all we know, this is shit that's just gone nuts in his head. And
yeah.
You know what I mean?
I was actually kind of thinking that maybe this had nothing to do with his daughter. And he had just deluded himself into thinking that,
because normally when you get involved with the old ones or the, you're nuts. You're only doing it because you've gone crazy. Because our minds can't, comprehend the vastness of the light between the stars and the old ones and all that shit, Cthulhu. And, usually when you read those things, it's because people have gone cuckoo bananas.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So possibly that's what was going on. They drove him cuckoo bananas, but gave him just enough, a little bit of stuff for him to actually go in there and start resurrecting dead tissue and not letting people die, but letting them rot, which is, of course, so much fun.
Yeah. That was nice of him.
Yeah. Now,
what was that really? There was some movie that they made fun of on Mystery Science Theater years ago. Where that was what the doctor was doing. He was like experimenting on these people and trying to perfect immortality, but it messed people up, and he had like a whole basement prison full of these people at the end that they found that couldn't die, but they were just like these monstrous, like...
Sounds like Reanimator.
It wasn't Reanimator. It was something like... It might have been... The movie with that super long title, like The Incredibly Strange Creatures
who
Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Zombies.
Oh,
it might have been that one. I can't remember.
Ray Dennis Steckler.
Sure, though. What?
Ray Dennis Steckler.
Oh, I can't believe you know that.
Oh,
off
the
top of your head.
Of course.
Weirdo.
No, I don't think that's the one, because that's the Carnival Sideshow one where he gets hypnotized by the woman with the who does the crystal ball thing.
Yeah.
And
I thought, though, at the end, the thing was that he'd been experimenting. So, I don't know what movie it was, but it was one they made fun of.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, I only wish that Ray Dennis Steckler had seen a movie as complicated and layered as this one was.
Yeah.
Because it was so well done. And unlike some of the other films that we've talked about, with the Lovecraftian horror, cosmic horror things, boom! This had a lot of action. It had a lot of speed. The pacing was very, very, quick. This was not a slow burn, like you say, where a lot of them tend to be.
Like the last one we did, the Nun one,
right?
Dark Waters,
right?
It ended up with a Lovecraftian twist at the end,
sure.
But you had to wait all the way through to get to it, and it was very much a slow burn. Not that it was bad. It was it was atmospheric and the suspense was crazy and the symbolism was beautiful and everything. But then you got this like punch of Lovecraft right at the very end, and this was like all the way through this one.
Yeah, this
like,
one,
the amount of time they must have spent making all of those special effect things.
Oh yeah.
Gosh. There were so many scenes that used it.
The details alone, just in the background, seeing all of the things drawn out onto the floor, all the ritualistic symbolism going on. And then not only that, but there's like puddles of goo everywhere and trash and stuff. But it all feels like it's there. It's all dressed specifically for the scene. It's not accidental. It's not like, oh, someone just randomly tossed in a bunch of shit. It feels like a painter or an artist went in there and deliberately set it up. And it makes sense given the background of these two folks.
And the burnt out part of the hospital, like when they first get into that part. Oh my gosh.
It's almost like a video game, like Silent Hill or something like that. That's the other thing that reminded me of that, to go into that kind of level of animation, not animation, but of graphic design for your story, and just interacting with all of the different stuff in the background and having that flavor the narrative was just really, really cool. And like I said, I mean, how many showers you think you needed to take after seeing this? It was just gross, you know? And it was just really, really well done. I only wish we had seen it later so that the sun wasn't coming in. And
you're so picky.
I am. But can you imagine seeing this on the big screen?
I would throw up. I would have, like, when the first puddle of goo exploded towards you. Oh man. Oh, what about 3D?
Yeah. And we did see the Blu-ray version of this, so it was very crisp. You know, the tonality of the darks and the grays and the brightness of the whites, and then the colors all stood out, and every detail just came to life, and the clarity of everything was just amazeballs. It was just so well done. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand how this can be a 5.9 on Internet Movie Database. How better could you make this?
Well, maybe it's just people rated the movie who were not into Lovecraftian horror.
Either that, or they're just jaded, or they, you know, I don't know. I really do not get it. This was a, I want to say, just about a masterpiece, you know. Pretty darn effective, if you ask me. I guess there are a few goofs. I think some people notice things like, you know, when the nurse goes into the medicine area and was able to pull out, I guess, morphine and other stuff for the pregnant woman that probably would have been locked up in a medicine cabinet somewhere. And
probably, you know, but they were also in the midst of moving an entire hospital.
Right,
some slack, administrative error.
right. Little things like that. I don't usually have a problem with that.
It was a country hospital.
And it was definitely a small rural hospital that had already had half or more of a thing burned out.
Yeah.
So yeah, what a great idea. And you get that sense of isolation just like you do in The Thing, where they're in that science station up in Antarctica.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. They can't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And you're stuck there, and you have to deal with all the shit that's going on. And then, even worse is that not only are you there, but then you end up, you know, half of them end up in this horrible pocket dimension.
Yeah.
leading to some other world.
Yeah.
That you can't escape from either. And then the one guy barely makes it out himself.
Yeah.
And wow. So I don't know. There are those who also said, you know, could there ever be a sequel? I don't know.
I mean, it'd be kind of fun to find out what the void that those Allison and Daniel were in at the end. They clearly had some kind of consciousness still, and they were in a completely other place. I didn't see Dr. Richard anywhere, even though he got pushed through the triangle too. So right. It's like, what's going on there? I mean, it's got an ambiguous ending.
Very
so,
ambiguous, yeah. So who knows?
But I feel like a sequel would probably just be dumb.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and here's the thing. Rather than a sequel, I almost wonder or almost wish that this had been something like a 12-part serial series, you know, where you got 10 or 12 hour-long episodes. Like Stranger Things, only for adults.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, come on. Stranger Things is for adults.
I guess.
Got kids in it, but it's totally for adults.
I guess. But without all the nostalgia and not all the other stuff cheapened it.
I love Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But I think it's that last season really got me. I thought it was amazing. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, anyway.
I just went down a peg in your estimation.
Yeah. I just don't love it as much. I like the first season. I think subsequent seasons weren't nearly as good.
Did you see the last season?
I did.
Okay. Yeah, because the second and third seasons, I was kind of like, meh. The very last season, though, oh.
Second half of the last season certainly picked
like
up.
Like the whole scene where they're in the plane and they're trying to take over the plane. God, I was like down on the couch, like yelling, and, you know, my significant other upstairs, shut up!
Well, but the difference in that is, I mean, A, it is appealing to a younger audience, and B, they do try to infuse a lot of humor into that as well. There's no humor in this film.
Nope.
No, not a drop of it. Nope. There is nothing to sort of like hang your sanity onto and sort of hold tight.
No, it's just all terrible.
It's all terrible. It's all horrible. And, you know, that's why I'm in there. I'm like going, yeah, we're at a place full of fluffy bunnies and kittens and penguins and wonderfulness. Everything is happy when it's clearly the opposite.
Yeah.
Doom, despair. And I think the tagline is something like, it's not death, it's worse. And they're not kidding. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're at a point.
That's a good tagline.
Yeah. When you're at a point where death offers no release or something is worse, you're not in a happy place.
It's Sisyphus-tastic, as my roommate in college used to say.
And for those who don't know who Sisyphus is, he was the dude who was cursed to rolling the ball up the hill forever, wasn't he?
The boulder, right. Yeah. Yep. The boulder. And then as soon as he would get to the top of the hill, it would roll back down. And he couldn't do anything else. And this is for eternity. Mm. Yay. Yeah. And that's, we were referencing him with the one creature who was trying so desperately to die that it kept impaling its head over and over on a spike until, you know, his head was totally hollow. There was like almost nothing left. And right. He was still not dead.
And still doing it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And who was the one that had his liver torn out by hawks every...
Prometheus. He stole fire.
Yeah.
And then there was Tantalus, who was always hungry and always thirsty, and he was in a lake, and every time he would bend down to drink, the lake would recede, and whenever he would reach up to grab an apple, the wind would blow it out of his way.
Yeah.
So
all you folks who have to work thankless jobs where you're just doing the same thing over and over and over ad nauseum. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You all know what we're talking about.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not a modern feeling. The ancient Greeks had it well.
Oh, the ancient Greeks would have loved this. Yeah. They would love this movie. Absolutely.
Medusa, run!
Oh, come on, Medusa? I mean, who would have fit in a Lovecraftian cosmic horror
Medusa.
Thing?
Medusa, yeah. Absolutely.
Most of the horrific creatures from the Greek mythology would have fit well.
The
so
Minotaur?
I imagine Lovecraft himself probably read a lot of Greek myths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though he disguised it well. So this to me was like a really, really interesting, really, really well made film, and I'm shocked that it doesn't get talked about nearly as much. And I'm shocked that a lot of the mainstream moviegoers and mainstream critics just don't seem to have enjoyed it as much. I'm not exactly sure what their criticism is exactly. Yeah. Maybe it was just too gory or too violent for some people or too, I don't know, esoteric, do you think? Do you think it was too...
I don't think it was esoteric, really. No.
I don't think so either.
No.
I mean, to me...
It was pretty gory, but I don't watch a lot of really gory movies, so I don't have a ton to...
Mm-hmm. To me,
this was a
nice balance of crazy, weird insanity that you got to think about with a whole lot of action and violence and gore, so that you can, you know, if you like one or the other or both, you could be pleased by this.
Yeah,
film.
Yeah, it had a good storyline in addition to all the action and gory stuff
and they
a few jump scares, you know.
They didn't skimp on any of the production. You know, the lighting was fabulous. The sound was great. They had a really, really good soundtrack. I'm sure Matt would love the music.
I noticed some of the music sounded great too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The acting was all on point. I didn't see a bad note from anybody.
That one scene when they look over and they see the doctor's robe, like, laying on, or his lab coat, whatever you call it, laying on the floor with the blood on it.
Where the body is supposed to be.
And the only reaction from the actors, they look at it for a second, and the cop, you can see his lip kind of quiver a little bit, and that's it. It just barely registers to them that something's not right there, and then they keep running, and it's like, oh my God, that was so subtle and awesome.
But it said like a million things.
Yes, it did. It was so great.
Yeah, yeah. You could tell that there's definitely not only a history between the sheriff and the nurse, but it's not a happy history, clearly. Mm-hmm. And there's definitely unresolved issues going on that they kind of talk about a little bit, but there's a lot more going on with their body language, which I thought was really, really good.
Yep. Yeah.
So yeah, this was, you know, a home run on every possible aspect, in my opinion. So yeah, great film, and was really happy to show it. In fact, everyone I've shown it to loved it, with the singular exception of J. Larry Butler, who poor guy. I mean, he's old school guy, and it was too violent and over the top for him. Wasn't his cup of tea.
Yeah.
I think the violence and gore sort of turned him off.
I can see that.
But just about everybody else was like, whoa, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And yeah, so, and why this just doesn't get talked about a lot is beyond me. It's not so bad as Dark Waters, where like nobody has heard of it. You know, there are right. some people, the people who are, like I said, who are really into indie horror know about it. But as far as the general audience out there, I think this kind of floated on by. Same thing with, you know, a movie we are going to end up doing, a spoiler, we're going to end up doing the Apostle.
Yay!
You know, the reason that one kind of floated by is because if you didn't have Netflix, you didn't see it.
Right, right.
Because it was a Netflix original, and mm-hmm. it was freaking awesome.
I thought so, too. And glad you liked it.
Well, and I didn't know it existed until people talked about it, and I think you mentioned it. And it
I
was,
did, yeah.
And it was, and I didn't know, I looked around, and I couldn't find it, and then boom, oh, it's on Netflix. And then I watched it, and I was like, holy shit, this is really, really good.
Yeah, I just randomly stumbled on it one night, and I kind of wanted a horror movie, but I sort of was in, you know, we had just watched Hagasusa, I think, and mm-hmm. I was like, I want to watch some more of that pagan horror stuff, you know? And,
right. I love
and
that.
And this really fit the bill. I read the description. I'm like, okay, it's probably going to suck and everything, and no.
I love folk horror. I love cosmic horror.
Pagan horror.
I love that stuff. And yeah, so we are going to do that. And again, it's not so much because it was forgotten, but just because there's a large segment of the movie going or movie watching audience, and even horror watching audience, that just don't know about it because either they don't have Netflix or they just never found it.
It flew under the radar.
Right. And yeah. From what I gather, it has not been released either. Which means the only way you're going to see it is
like
if it's on
DVD.
Right?
Or
exactly. Oh. Whereas at least The Void came out, and it's out on Blu-ray, which obviously I have a copy of. So yeah. So with regards, I mean, they're both worth getting, but definitely if you get to see The Void out there, go mm-hmm. score it, especially in Blu-ray, because I'm telling you, it looks absolutely dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
And if cosmic horror and Lovecraftian stuff and icky, gross body horror.
If you like tentacles, you will love this
yes.
movie.
Tentacles, yeah. We all rock in the tentacles yes. and the gore and the mm-hmm. goo and stuff. All that all icky stuff. So, yeah. Definitely check it out. And, yeah. There you go. You got any final words to say?
Yuck.
I almost kind of wish I could show this to Lenore, but I don't. See, she's a little too sensitive. I think she would not have. She would have appreciated.
She's young. Give her a few years to get jaded.
She would have appreciated how well done the movie is, but the subject matter would have turned her off.
I couldn't have watched something like this when I was her age either. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah. Whereas this was right up my dark, scary alley, pretty much from when I was a little tiny little mook.
Not me.
Well, thank you all very much for joining us for yet another episode. Thank you, Joe, for coming on. I hope you. I'm glad that you seem to have enjoyed this movie too.
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
And so, as far as how does this one rank regards or next to like Hagasusa and Dark Waters and.
I mean, Hagasusa was absolutely my favorite that we've done. I've done three with you now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I would still put it third. I just think, I don't know. I like the folk horror stuff, I guess. And I'm not even a huge horror. I don't have a huge knowledge base, but I really enjoy the folk horror stuff that I've been seeing, and I like gothic horror a lot. Like when mm-hmm. I read, I love, you know, like
oh, yeah.
Wuthering Heights and Dracula and there's a new book out called The Death of Jane Lawrence, which is nice. like gothic horror.
See, and that's the kind of stuff.
To 50.
That's the kind of stuff that I love, and I try to talk to Moody because he loves slashers.
Especially
teenage slashers.
I'm not for me. I'm not sure that I've seen that many. Like, I'm not even seeing all the Halloween movies.
You've seen them when you've seen them all.
And but I just don't think that'd be my thing.
First Hollywood movie is Halloween is a masterpiece.
Oh.
But all the rest are kind
of really
bad.
Enjoy any of the supernatural stuff, which is weird because I'm not really religious or anything, but anything with a ghost that's haunting somebody.
Oh, yeah.
I love that stuff, and I don't know why, but I love it.
Exactly. In reality, a crazy person running around killing people is far more frightening.
Because it's more realistic.
Because it's real.
Yeah.
But I don't watch these things for realities per se.
It's all about the atmosphere.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you're not getting that with teenage slashers. You're getting that with vampires and crazy Cthulhu nonsense and gothic horror and weird, creepy pagan folk horror.
And because there's part of my lizard brain that still believes in that stuff. Like, rationally, I don't believe in any of it. But when the lights are out and it's the middle of the night and I'm going downstairs to get a glass of water.
It's fun!
Oh my gosh. It's like I'm 12 years old again. Mm-hmm. I have to turn all the lights on and then I still have to run up the stairs. Why? Because I watch shit like this, probably.
And your cat probably scared you.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm a very skittish, jumpy person.
Oh my goodness. How did you get through this?
That's why I like jump scares so much, because I think it gives me more adrenaline than the average
person.
In
a safe way.
Because I'm, right, exactly. And I love haunted houses. Oh, crap, do I love haunted houses. But I can't take my significant other cannot go to haunted houses with me. Because it's too real for him, and he just freaks out. And it's not because he's afraid of the jumps and stuff. It's that he seriously thinks that if you are the type of person that would want to do this for a living, you're probably more likely to be a serial killer. And I'm like, I don't know that there have been any longitudinal studies that make that causal relationship.
Fear is a funny thing, because it will take the most logical and intelligent person and turn them into a quivering pile of jello.
Mm-hmm.
It's just one of those things. It totally disarms us. And so that's why I love a movie that can do that, especially to me, who's seen a billion movies at this point in my life, and I'm extremely difficult to actually frighten or scare. But every now and again, I'll get a movie that creeps the living hell out of me, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I immediately want to share that in film with everyone I have ever met in my entire life, because it's just wonderful. So, and that's one reason why I wanted to share this film, because I just thought it was so well done and so cool.
Well, even though I'm putting it third of the three that I've watched, it didn't mean that I didn't like it, but I definitely am into the weird spirits thing more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the reasons I liked Dark Water so much, because it felt like it was going to be ghosts and weird things like that. And then it turned out to be more Lovecraft,
right.
You know? So I actually didn't dig the ending as much, you know, except, you know, her walking around blind was kind of neat, you know, that was cool. But I liked the whole gothic, they're trapped in this old convent and there's no electricity and stuff. Like, just the whole atmosphere. That's why I like Crimson Peak so much, you know, not a whole lot story-wise going on in Crimson Peak. It's just like a atmosphere piece.
Well, we've already covered The Uninvited for Forgotten Horror Classics. However, because I actually have it on Criterion, we're going to do it for Criterion Watch.
Ooh.
And you need to come.
What's The Uninvited? Because I feel like it's not that Korean movie, is it?
No. This is a classic 1960 horror film that is probably one of the greatest haunted house movies ever made. Really, really super good. I think you would enjoy it.
I want to see it.
So we will do that this season on Criterion Watch for Moody, because I know he hasn't seen it either.
Yay!
So this would be a great time. I showed it to Lenore, and Lenore said that was the scariest movie she had seen.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, really, I definitely want to watch it, especially if that dog is invited. Who's the dog? Is that Rocky? Was that the name of his poodle?
Yeah. Little Rocky.
If Rocky will be there, I'm going to be there.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Well, thanks again for joining us. Please join us next time for another episode of Forgotten Horror Classics, and we will see you all on the flip side.
Bye.
Bye. Mm-hmm.